The Vikings win their first preseason game of the year over the Las Vegas Raiders, 24-23. We talked quite a bit about J.J. McCarthy in the first hour. We did not talk about Sam Darnold very much, which there's a reason for that. He barely played. But nonetheless, Vikings are 1-0 on a meaningless season of four games. Alec Lewis was at the game yesterday, covers the Vikings for The Athletic, and he joins us this morning on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Alec, thanks for joining us. We all kind of, the consensus is, we saw what we like to see out of J.J. McCarthy. What did you see that you liked, and what's kind of the team thought after the game yesterday on his performance?
Yeah, first, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. It's fun to be back. Fun to be talking football again. I know it's been a minute and a long build-up to get here. But, no, I mean, the two things for me that stood out the most were, A, the way J.J. responded from the interception, which was a 3rd-and-8 little play where his pass protection wasn't the best, and rather than kind of resetting and probably firing over the middle early, he tried to kind of escape out of the pocket and create, and was a little late on the throw. But the way he responded from that adversity in that environment that he'd never been in before, that really impressed me. And then, like, people are going to make a big deal about the two touchdown passes, and it's great to throw touchdowns, of course, and to hit kind of the layups that you need to hit. But for me, it was the plays before each of those touchdowns that really will stay in my mind. There was a 3rd-and-9 that he converted while getting hit in the face by a free rusher and converted over the middle to tight end Nick Muse, excuse me. And then there was a 4th-and-1 where he stood in and hit Tristan Jackson over the middle. And like, the touchdowns don't happen if you don't convert those weighty downs, which is what Kevin O'Connell calls them. So it's the response from the adversity in that environment, and then the poise on those downs, which just, I mean, if you've been around training camp, nothing about what we saw yesterday was surprising. Like, there have been times where he's looked like the young quarterback that he is, but most of the time, it's just been an impressive run. Like, I've said it publicly many times, I did not expect him to look as good as he's looked in training camp. And then, obviously yesterday it was great that a lot of people got to see what has shown up on the practice fields in Eagan. Everybody was pretty impressed, both internally and I think the fans who watched it on TV and were there to watch.
Alec, I had the opportunity to be there at practice a while ago, and I came away with exactly what you're talking about. And one of the debates that we've been having between the three of us here, and last week we had a big debate about this, is, can J.J. McCarthy be the starter? And my question, my answer was, yes, he should be. We picked him as high as we did for a reason. I think he could get out there. I don't think it's going to hurt his psyche. What do you think about that? Is he capable of being able to start? Maybe it's not even game one, but maybe it is. Is that something that is far-fetched, or is that in the cards?
Yeah, you know, week one to me is a little – It's a little far-fetched. It's not, like, I'm not going to rule it out of the question, because Kevin O'Connell hasn't done that. And the fact that they haven't done that, to me, says that they want to continue to see everything they want to see from both him and Sam Darnold. But, I mean, in terms of him starting over the course of this season, unless Sam Darnold is performing at a level that is blowing all of us away, I think pretty obviously, then at some point, yeah, I do expect J.J. to start. And I got to be honest, I thought this could be, like, J.J. sits the whole year, he sits from a developmental standpoint, and they think about this thing very long term. But I think even them, internally, they've been very impressed just with how advanced he is for a 21-year-old. And that's the other thing about this. Like, it's not as if he is the Michael Penix who's 25, 26, where you feel like you got to get him on the field. It's not like he is the Drake May who's even 2 years older than J.J. McCarthy, the Jaden Daniels who's 24 years old. Like, those guys, I know they were all picked in the same class, obviously, but they are in way different places in terms of, like, the development and where the arc of their career might go. So, I mean, I've tried to follow kind of the approach of what I've heard from the staff from the get-go, which is the long-term development, but you continue to see him show up and perform the way he does. And to me, him starting is not going to be a question at all of arm strength of arm talent, of accuracy. Like, I mean, you watch him out of practice, and it just stands out pretty obviously. But to me, it's more, can he navigate an entire system from the get-go? Like, that's the question. The onus that falls on the quarterback in Kevin O'Connell's system is pretty – it's a pretty big load. And so how quickly they're willing to put all of that on him, we'll see. But I say that, and I also know that they're doing a lot in terms of the offensive line has a lot more say than they've had in the last couple of years with Kevin O'Connell, because you have a new quarterback in the system. So I do think there are ways that they can kind of manage the overall load in terms of pre-snap process and all that, to where I come back to where I started, and I say I do think at some point JJ will be starting, given the trajectory that he's kind of on.
Alec Lewis from The Athletic joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. I don't want to spend all this time on the quarterback position, but we've talked a bunch about JJ McCarthy and not a lot about Sam Darnold and how pivotal this season will be in his career. Do you get this? How much have you even talked to him? I mean, everyone seems to be focused on JJ. Do you get the sense that he feels like this year is a chance for him to springboard himself for future, that this is kind of a make, I guess for lack of a better term, a make or break season for him for the rest of his NFL career after this?
Yeah, I mean, I have not sat down with him one-on-one and had some of these conversations. He's held a couple pressers, and he's been mostly, I would say, just kind of general with how he's talked about everything. But there's no question that for a guy who is still as young as he is, having had two starting opportunities in the past, in New York and in Carolina, like, this is probably his last obvious chance to start games, to be the guy, and to prove that he is what people thought he would be going back to the 2018 draft. You know, it's funny, like, I've had a lot of conversations with some execs across the league and scouts, and they're like, yeah, I mean, like, we love this guy. Like, we thought he was the safest pick out of all the guys in that draft, and that draft included Josh Allen and some others. And really, to me, and it's something that I've reported around a lot going back weeks and months, like, I think Sam's story is very emblematic of what happens when you are thrown into these environments that don't that aren't built to maximize quarterback development. And it's almost poetic to me that this guy who was in those environments is now starting to potentially fend off a guy who is in arguably a
the exact same environment. Yes.
No, they like the most optimal environment. So it's like this to me, it's like he's got to look at this and be like, man, I wish when I came into the league, I wasn't going to the New York Jets, where it was an absolute mess. I was in an environment that is focused on quarterback development around some really smart coaches. So really interesting. But yeah, I mean, yesterday I thought he too looked very good. Like, there were, I think he finished four for eight for like 58 yards or something like that. But there were a couple conversions for him. There was a third down where he found Jordan Addison on and he kind of gotten tripped in the backfield. Pretty impressive throw. I think the fans who have been out at training camp, you're probably a little surprised by the overall athleticism of him. So I'm very, maybe it's the nerd in me, maybe it's the fact that this is my job, I don't really know, but I'm very interested to see what he will look like with the skill players on this team and with the coaching of this team. Like, that is an interesting football experiment for me.
Alec, he's a USC quarterback. End of story. He's not going to go anywhere. Hey, so Dallas Turner, he's been amazing, absolutely amazing. I was there watching that guy, and he is a freak. I think if you're looking around the NFL and you want to find the guys that absolutely will be game changers, I think he's one of them. What have you seen out of him, and do you like what you've seen so far? He even had a sack yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday was really, to me, it was the first time he's not going up against Christian Darrisaw, which is not really it's not fair that a guy stepping in who's a rookie has to go up against that mountain of a man every single day. It's kind of ridiculous, and it's got to be, for him, like, again, I've got to go against 71. This is absurd. But, no, I mean, yesterday, I think you saw why the Vikings traded as many picks as they did for him. It is just a rare combination of speed and strength that allows him to, I mean, he just win with on pure athleticism. I think there's going to be a runway that is going to be necessary for him in terms of overall technique and in terms of just overall size, probably in the end against some of these elite tackles in the NFL. But I mean, you can't find guys who are 240 pounds who run 4.38 and can jump 40 inches. Like, it just doesn't. You can't find those guys on the street, and that's what he is. So to see him as well in that environment and look very comfortable, I think it bodes well for his development. But again, like, I think with both of these guys, as optimistic as everyone should be, like, the league is, as you guys obviously know, the league is ridiculous. It's very hard, and the talent is very impressive. So it's not going to be smooth sailing at all times, I don't think, for either one of them, including Dallas, who is as much of a freak as he is.
Before we let you go, Alec, I want to talk to you about another high draft pick for the Vikings from 2 years ago, Lewis Cine, who was picked number one, first round, 32 overall. Injuries have plagued him in his first few years in the season. He did not look, I think Pete and I both said, he did not look like he was making much of an impact in yesterday's preseason game. But the secondary is in a lot of disarray right now with the Vikings in terms of injuries. Do you see him making it past the preseason? I mean, I know that there's quite a hit if he gets cut, but do you feel that he will be on the roster this year?
If I was pegging it right now, I'd say no. I mean, the safety room is so deep with what they have in terms of Harrison Smith and Cam Bynum and Josh Metellus and even Theo Jackson, who has kind of progressed into a guy who you wonder if ultimately when Harrison Smith hangs it up, if Theo can kind of take the reins there. Like, he's been that impressive going back to the spring. And Lewis, it's just been a tough go. I mean, the injury obviously in 2022 in London was so suboptimal and not what you're looking for, but he didn't play much before that. It's just never felt like the staff, it just never felt like he's been viewed as a difference maker, really. And I think the hill to climb to prove that at this point on a roster that has a bunch of intriguing undrafted guys and just ancillary talent that they're going to want to keep. I think it probably will be the end of the road.
Alec Lewis, thanks so much, man. Appreciate your time and hope we can do it again throughout the season. Okay.
Thanks,
yeah,
Alec.
Of course. Enjoy. No, love it every time. I appreciate it. Like I said, like, I'm pumped to be talking football. I told one of the execs yesterday before the game, I was like, this is going so fast. Like, what is going? It's I love it. It's very fun. So no, I appreciate it, and we will talk.
We'll be at week. Sure. We'll be in week 16 before you know it. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, before I know it. Yeah, after the sprint that is this insane. What will be a roller coaster as it always is. No, I appreciate it.
Always
Thank you, guys.
Is.
Enjoy your rest of your Sunday.
Thanks, Alec Lewis on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline from The Athletic. We'll take a break and come back. We'll start to talk a little bit of Olympics as well and answer some unanswerable questions.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Questions. We always love to do that. You're listening to The Huddle on E3OWCCO. It is gold for the 2024 Team USA men's and women's basketball teams, both winning a gold medal. Last week we talked about if the 92 Dream Team could beat this 2024 team. So we had some fun with it, and we entered it into AI, because why not? This is what AI was made for, was to settle arguments between friends about sports. We asked AI to simulate a game between the 1992 U.S. men's Olympic basketball team and the 2024 team. Sure, here we go. It's an 8 o'clock tip-off at a neutral site. First quarter opening tip. It goes into the play-by-play. I won't read it all to you. Patrick Ewing wins it for the Dream Team. Early scoring, Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson lead the way for the Dream Team. Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Halliburton respond with aggressive play. Final score, Dream Team 105, 2024 Team USA 97.
Sounds right.
MVP Michael Jordan. His late game heroics and overall impact were the difference maker. Led Dream Team with 30 points. Second leading scorer in the game, though, Anthony Edwards with 25 points. But there you go, Pete. AI agrees with you that the 92 team could beat Team USA, despite the fact that Charlie and I both had this. I think we had the same argument, Charlie.
Yep. You did.
That the competition is so much harder now. And I thought Victor Wembanyama played decently well yesterday. He did not have I don't think he had the best Olympic tournament. But Steph Curry, I mean, gosh, he's just got ice flowing through his veins. But you win. You were right.
Well,
AI declared you the winner.
But I also lost because I said that we would, the 92 team would win by maybe 30 or 40. Man, I still stand by that, by the way, AI or not.
Well, let's be clear about what AI says, Dave, and why it says it. It says that the sources that it's taking its information from online think that the Dream Team is better. That's fine. It has more sources in that regard. So, you know, AI is a sticky subject. You guys.
It's very sticky. Very sticky. But let's remember, guys, the 92 team won by 44 points on average. And if you line up one against the other, Steph Curry, of course, would get in there. But it starts with Michael Jordan. Is the next best Magic Johnson? I'd say so. Larry Bird, sure. And all of a sudden, the next thing you know, you're going through the 92 team versus the 24 team. And it takes a while before the 24s, in my opinion, even start to scratch to get into that team, to be a part of that team. When you look at the absolute beatdowns, and then you look at our 24 team struggling against Serbia. Now, Serbia's good, right? They're very good. There's no doubt about it. But we won by 4 points. When you look at the Dream Team, the closest, I think the closest was 38 points. These guys just blew everybody off the map.
But there was not a single player that was half as good that they faced as Nikola Jokic or Victor Wembanyama. There's not one single guy that they faced in that entire tournament that was even half as good.
By the way, the competition
is just completely different.
They beat Cuba by 79. But anyway, all that being said, you're right, though. I mean, have the other countries, absolutely, they've gotten better and better and better. There's no doubt about it. But I just think the sheer dominance of the 92 team and the players that when I look at them, you know, both of them are going to have Hall of Famers. But I think if in NBA terms, the Hall of Famers are different. I think that the guys from 92, that is a much different group of guys than I think what we've got right now. But Steph Curry easily was absolutely record-setting, unbelievable. He's the only reason we didn't lose, I think, to Serbia, quite frankly. Otherwise, maybe this would turn into something a little closer to, hey, the 92 team maybe blows them out.
Serbia and France.
Well, to be – go ahead, Charlie.
No, all you. I had to sneeze.
Oh, so I wanted to full disclosure here. I had to run the simulation twice because the first time it said it was a tie, which we all like. Come on, that's a quitter response. So we had to run it twice. I was so impressed with Steph Curry, and I mean, it shows you obviously he. I don't think he's still lost anything, but the guy is just so clutch. You know, I mean, he's just. To see the big eyes and he, you know, that's the guy you want. And I truly believe this, that Anthony Edwards will grow into that guy, right? Yes. That guy that, hey, it's on the line. Just come on. Everybody get on my back. Let's go. And he hits those, you know, those crucial threes at the end of the game where, I mean, he just steps up and chucks it. It looks like almost, you know, Wembanyama had a nice three late too, which I was very impressed for a guy his size, shooting threes, But Steph, I mean, one of them I think was on a double team too, where he just, it looked like it was off balance. Yeah. He chucked it and it's like, that's not going in. Oh my gosh, it went in.
It's Steph Curry.
He's just got such, he's got such swagger when he's out there. And I think that's where, in terms of trajectory, I can see that's where Anthony Edwards is going to grow into.
So is your assertion, though, because this is what you wrote down in the notes, I'm letting the people know, is Steph Curry the greatest men's Olympic basketball player? Is that your assertion?
No, Jordan's still better. I'm sorry. Well, I love Steph Curry. Jordan's still better.
Are you saying like as a player just in general or as an Olympic player? Because those are two different things, right? You could have a really, good Olympics and not necessarily be, you know, great elsewhere.
Sure.
I think the greatest American Olympic basketball player was on this team, but his name was not Steph Curry.
LeBron?
No.
Oh, God.
Who do you think?
Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is the greatest American Olympic basketball player. He averages 20 points a game. He has 200 more points than any other Olympian. He was not on that bronze medal team. He has only won gold medals as a United States Olympic basketball player. He is the greatest American Olympic basketball player.
He's so special too, guys, because when you look at him up, when you see him like NBA, I've seen him there. I have not been ever to Olympics to watch him, but I can tell you this, it transcends over there. And he's a basically call it a 7 foot guy who can shoot the lights out from anywhere. I mean, he's that good. He's a really, really impressive guy. So I would say that you're right, Charlie. I would say Kevin Durant, but. Yeah. What happened with Steph Curry saved the U.S. from not losing off on this gold medal.
There's a difference between great players and great clutch. Yes, absolutely there is.
Yep.
The top three, interestingly enough, scoring players in Olympic men's basketball for the United States, Durant, James, and then Carmelo Anthony.
Carmelo Anthony was
really great for some of those teams. Michael Jordan all the way down at fifth, by the way, 256 total points, 16 points a game for Michael Jordan in the Olympic Games.
He spread the ball around. Yeah. He didn't pull a LeBron and shoot every time he got the ball.
LeBron, come on. Were you even watching? LeBron averages 12 a game. He's spreading it around.
I'm not a big fan.
I actually thought LeBron played. He did spread the ball around. I was surprised a couple times where he really just seemed okay with like, hey, I'm just going to dish and kind of let it go. But I think that's what you have to have on great teams, right? You have to have guys. And this is what happened in 92. You have to have guys accept the role that's there for on this team, right? Mm-hmm. And in the NBA, you're the number one guy always on your team. Like the game's on the line, go. But now all of a sudden, it's an all-star team. So are you going to accept your role and say, okay, they're probably going to double team me, or maybe we got to get the ball around more. Am I going to accept this? And that is something that I will say about LeBron James, is he truly accepted his role in these games for sure.
You know who didn't accept
their role? Did he have any load
role?
Management?
I don't think so. You know who didn't accept their role, though?
Who's that, Charlie?
It would be Jason Tatum's mom. did you see that?
That's great.
I didn't.
Oh, did you miss the stories? Jason Tatum's mom demands answers after her son is benched at the Olympics.
Oh, Lord.
Can you imagine?
There's the good and bad of things in sports, guys.
Oh, boy. All right, let's take a break on that note. We'll come back. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. Little more Olympics here. The IOC announced Sunday the bronze medal given to American gymnast Jordan Chiles in the floor exercise has now been stripped from her and given to the Romanian counterpart, Anna Barbosu, I believe is how you pronounce it. I actually watched this happen, and Chiles basically, she had a floor exercise and Barbosa's floor exercise where Barbosa was a little bit above, but Chiles' team, coaches, appealed and said no, that the degree of difficulty on a routine should have been higher. They said okay. And so after Barbosa thinks she's got the bronze, they take it from her and they give it to Jordan Chiles. So part of me is feeling terrible for Barbosu. You're happy that Chiles, you know, got the bronze. It was a big one for her. But you feel terrible for this poor woman from Brazil who thought she won the bronze, and then they go, sorry, you're not getting it. And now they overturn it again and said, actually, what happened is that Jordan Chiles' coaches appealed it, but they were 4 seconds too late because you have a minute to appeal. They were 4 seconds too late. So because of that, they've now taken the medal from Chiles and given it back to Barbosu. The U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee saying Sunday it would appeal that decision. Quote, we firmly believe that Jordan's rightfully earned the bronze medal, and there were critical errors in both the initial scoring by the International Gymnastics Federation and the subsequent CAS appeals process that need to be addressed. There was initial error in scoring. All of this to say, why did they even take it away from her in the first place? This is heart-wrenching, too, on a lot of different levels. These athletes from all countries, they work so hard, and to be told that you win the bronze and then to appeal that because there was a degree of difficulty. And I'm not the biggest gymnastics mind. I will not try to be. But it's been back and forth so many times in appeals and appeals. And when, first of all, number one, when do the appeals stop? Because if this appeals again and they say, okay, you actually get it, now they take it from the woman again and give it back to Jordan Chiles.
I mean, I think for more or less, the appeal has already stopped. This is not going to go into effect.
This whole thing is, to me, this is silly. It goes to the whole, like, do you just judge sports in real time and that's it? Or do we really need to have all of these replays and appeals and all this other stuff? And I just, to me, this is the latest chapter of that. If this is the score, it's the score. And it's done. And we've talked about this in different kinds of different sports. You know, baseball, should they have all these replays? Should they have should you be able to argue balls and strikes? Should you have the 17 different replays in the NFL when a guy makes a catch? This is one of those times to me that the score is the score. It's done.
It's tough. It's a tough situation because of the fact of how this has played out underneath the rules that they've presently got. And the fact that you've got the minute, but they were 4 seconds too late is that's got to be brutal, Dave. I mean, you get pulled in so many different directions on this whole thing. And neither one of us, I don't think Charlie either, I'll throw in all three of us. I don't think we have enough of an understanding from the standpoint of gymnastics and the scoring and all the rest of it. But we know it's complex. There's no doubt about that. And we're finding out how complex it really is because of exactly what's playing out right in front of us right now. It's crazy. It's the emotions. I can't even imagine for all of the people involved, all the emotions, the ups and the downs and everything. And it's let's hope it's over. But I think that the reality is there might be something that needs to get fixed. Once you have an incident like this, now all of a sudden you probably at least should look back and say, okay, in the future, how should this really have played out? Because certainly the way it's gone in this particular time frame has not been good.
Let's also not forget, I'll have to do some research on Brazil, but there's money that gets given out here for winning a bronze. It's substantial. I mean, in Tokyo it was $15,000. I'm not sure if it's the exact same in Brazil, but we're talking about. I mean, that's a pretty good chunk of change to say here you have it, and actually now we're taking it away from you. And whether would the U.S. Olympic Committee decide to give it to her anyway? Boy, that's tough. I mean, it kind of casts a little bit of a cloud over what was not too much, but it is kind of a tough one to swallow with what I think we've all said. It was really a phenomenal Olympics, put on well, great competition, incredibly entertaining. But once again, gymnastics is kind of has been open to that controversy of how they score things, how they put someone on the team, and who doesn't, and what's kind of done behind the veil of disguise. Charlie, you have any thoughts on this? This is a tough one. I don't know. It's just difficult because you want both of them to just have that success.
Yeah.
But this not everybody can win.
I mean, two mistakes were made, in my opinion. One was the original scoring error, of course.
Yes.
And the second was revising that scoring initially after the 1 minute was up, right? Listen, they do have this rule in place. You have 1 minute if you think something was wrong. You have 1 minute. If it's over the minute, too bad. We made this marker. This is what it's going to be. It's unfortunate. It shouldn't necessarily have happened that way, but they have the rules in place. They have the judging in place. That's what has to go happen going forward. So it's a shame for Jordan because she apparently did deserve it based on what the score should have been, but they didn't appeal it in time, and that's just kind of the way it's going to be, and that's the way it should be, in my opinion.
Well, let's hope it's fixed before the LA games. And by the way, and the other thing I'd say about this whole thing is, and Charlie, I think you were the one who brought it up. Maybe it was you, Dave. I'm not sure. But there's something about the Olympics being in Paris or, you know, any of the foreign countries outside of the U.S. And I'm not saying we shouldn't ever be a host, because we obviously should. And LA is a great spot to do it. We've done it before. But there's something special, I think, about these countries that, you know, have so much history and so much more. It's just a different environment. It feels more Olympic. It's almost like when we come here, it's almost like bringing breakdancing into the Olympics itself. It's not. It just doesn't feel quite the same to me.
Well, since you brought it up, breaking.
Ray gun.
The newest Olympic sport. Gentlemen, I like to think that I'm a broad sports fanatic. I especially love the kind of the sports that you never see. Sport climbing is incredible. Surfing is fun. Trampoline. I had so much anxiety over watching trampoline because I was just so afraid they were going to fall off. But I love that stuff. I sat down yesterday. Table tennis. I love watching table tennis. It's fun. Badminton is great. Weightlifting is cool. My son and I were watching yesterday. We're watching breaking because we're like, oh, let's watch that. We haven't seen that yet. And it's like it's a dance battle on a circular table. I had no idea what was going on or how things were being scored. They keep waving at each other and like saying stuff. And it's like, what are they being judged on? Now, and this is not to take away, and I want to be very clear about this. This is not to take away that the athletic feat that is breaking. I mean, these kids are athletes, and it is not easy to do that stuff. But break dancing, number one, is to me a form of art. Number two, if you're going to put break dancing in, why isn't ballet in?
Yeah.
Why isn't tap dancing in? And my daughter's a dancer. And they're
adding all these.
They all work very hard.
Yeah.
Why isn't that in?
Why did we choose this one dancing discipline?
Yeah.
Why is it just this? If we're going to put dancing in, and I'm fine with that, I'd be okay with that. I have no issue that I think those are athletic events, and we can see who the best in the world is. We have, you know, synchronized swimming, which is swim dancing. Why are we choosing just this one singular form? It's just a little odd. I mean, I have nothing against it. Who cares? If people are having fun, they're representing their countries, they're doing things. Who really cares? But
are we bringing on line dancing?
Sure. Why not?
That I'd watch.
I don't care.
Come on, guys.
Who cares?
I don't know. If you're and then there's, you know, the argument that is he said my son had said, "Well, what about skateboarding?" I said, "Well, you know, at least there's an apparatus involved." But I don't know. Again, I'm not trying to take away from the dancers because athletically I can't do it, and it was very impressive. I just think of it more as an art form than I do as a sport. I've landed on it.
Listen, I don't know if you've ever looked in the history of the modern Olympics at the very least, but this is far from the weirdest events that they've ever had in the Olympics. Did you know I believe it was in the 1904 to like 1932 or so, city planning was an event in the Olympics.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm 100% serious. You can look up the gold medals for city planning in the 1920s, and it's for big event centers around the world that these architects made.
How is that athletic?
Whatever
sport.
Okay, you're gonna have to, because I've done no prep on this, so I don't know. But I just Googled weird Olympic sports. Here's 33 weird Olympic sports. I won't go through all of them that once found themselves a part of the games. Tug of war. I'd watch that.
That's classic.
live pigeon shooting. Club swinging.
Oh my goodness.
Something called lacan. I don't even know what that is. Looks like it's fencing with wooden sticks. Well, the steeplechase is in there, which I kind of cool. This looks like highlight. This is bizarre. I had no idea that all these things were part of it.
So breaking really doesn't even make the list.
Ooh, pistol dueling.
Oh, that's a good one.
Well, you can't take back medals in that one, can you? All right, this is fun. Let's take a break. We'll come back and put a wrap on today's show. Okay, we're having some fun with the Olympic sports. I love it. All right, Pete, the freak list.
Yeah. I just thought it would be kind of fun just to kind of go over. Yeah. We talked a little Gopher football already, and I'm very excited. I know we went through what we thought the wins and losses looked like, but I'll tell you what. We've got an offensive tackle, left tackle, Arante Ursary, who is pretty much right in there for everything you'd ever want in a freak. I mean, this guy, he's 6'6", 330 pounds. And this is not me picking him out. This is what he was able to accomplish. He did a 640-pound squat. He did a bench press of 412, which is interesting that they have that number. But 409-pound clean and jerk thing. I mean, across the board, he did the 10-yard split of 1.52. This guy weighs 330 pounds, for crying out loud. He hit 18 miles an hour. Is how fast he was running.
Wow.
And he's got a vertical, he's got a broad jump, and then we've got our linebacker, Cody Lindenberg. And I've stood next to this kid. He is a monster. He's a freak. 6'3", 240 pounds. He got up to 21.46 miles per hour in his shuttle run, which is pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a linebacker to get that fast and that kind of a run, he broad jumped 10 feet. His vertical's 36 inches. I mean, everywhere you look, he did a clean of 387 pounds, bench 350. I mean, we've got some guys, but Charlie gets credit for this one because I saw Brockington and I didn't.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
A little more Olympics here. The IOC announced Sunday the bronze medal given to American gymnast Jordan Chiles in the floor exercise has now been stripped from her and given to the Romanian counterpart, Anna Barbosu, I believe is how you pronounce it. I actually watched this happen, and Chiles basically, she had a floor exercise and Barbosa's floor exercise where Barbosa was a little bit above. But Chiles' team, coaches, appealed and said no, that the degree of difficulty on a routine should have been higher. They said okay. And so after Barbosa thinks she's got the bronze, they take it from her and they give it to Jordan Chiles. So part of me is feeling terrible for Barbosa, yeah. Excuse me. You're happy that Chiles, you know, got the bronze. It was a big one for her. But you feel terrible for this poor woman from Brazil who thought she won the bronze, and then they go, sorry, you're not getting it. And now they overturn it again and said, actually, what happened is that Jordan Chiles' coaches appealed it, but they were 4 seconds too late because you have a minute to appeal. They were 4 seconds too late. So because of that, they've now taken the medal from Chiles and given it back to Barbosa. The U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee saying Sunday it would appeal that decision. Quote, we firmly believe that Jordan's rightfully earned the bronze medal, and there were critical errors in both the initial scoring by the International Gymnastics Federation and the subsequent CAS appeals process that need to be addressed. There was initial error in scoring. All of this to say, why did they even take it away from her in the first place? This is heart-wrenching, too, on a lot of different levels. These athletes from all countries, they work so hard. And to be told that you win the bronze and then to appeal that because there was a degree of difficulty. And I'm not the biggest gymnastics mind. I will not try to be. But it's been back and forth so many times in appeals and appeals. And when, first of all, number one, when do the appeals stop? Because are you, I mean, if this appeals again and they say, okay, you actually get it. Now they take it from the woman again and give it back to Jordan Chiles.
I mean, I think for more or less the appeal has already stopped. This is not going to go into effect.
This whole thing is, to me, this is silly. It goes to the whole, like, do you just judge sports in real time and that's it? Or do we really need to have all of these replays and appeals and all this other stuff? And I just, to me, this is the latest, kind of the latest chapter of that. If this is the score, it's the score and it's done. And I we've talked about this in different kinds of different sports, you know, baseball. Should they have all these replays? Should they have the, you know, should you be able to argue balls and strikes? Should you have the 17 different replays in the NFL when a guy makes a catch? This is one of those times to me that the score is the score. It's done.
It's tough. It's a tough situation because of the fact of how this has played out underneath the rules that they've presently got. And the fact that you've got the minute, but they were 4 seconds too late is, that's got to be brutal, Dave. I mean, that,
yeah.
You get pulled in so many different directions on this whole thing. And neither one of us, I don't think Charlie either, I'll throw in all three of us. I don't think we have enough of an understanding from the standpoint of gymnastics and the scoring and all the rest of it. But we know it's complex. There's no doubt about that. And we're finding out how complex it really is because of exactly what's playing out right in front of us right now. It's crazy. It's the emotions. I can't even imagine for all of the people involved, all the emotions, the ups and the downs and everything. And it's let's hope it's over. But I think that the reality is there might be something that needs to get fixed. You know, once you have an incident like this, now all of a sudden you probably at least should look back and say, okay, in the future, how should this really have played out? Because certainly the way it's gone in this particular time frame has not been good.
Let's also not forget, I'll have to do some research on Brazil, but there's money that gets given out here for winning a bronze. It's substantial. I mean, in Tokyo it was $15,000. I'm not sure if it's the exact same in Brazil, but we're talking about. I mean, that's a pretty good chunk of change to say here you have it, and actually now we're taking it away from you. And whether would the U.S. Olympic Committee decide to give it to her anyway? Boy, that's tough. I mean, it kind of casts a little bit of a cloud over what was not too much, but it is kind of a tough one to swallow with what yeah. I think we've all said. It was really a phenomenal Olympics, put on well, great competition, incredibly entertaining. But once again, gymnastics is kind of has been open to that controversy of how they score things, how they put someone on the team, and who doesn't, and. What's kind of done behind the veil of disguise. Charlie, you have any thoughts on this? This is a tough one. I don't know. It's just difficult because you want both of them to just have that success.
Yeah.
But this not everybody can win.
I mean, two mistakes were made, in my opinion. One was the original scoring error, of course.
Yes.
And the second was revising that scoring initially after the 1 minute was up, right? Listen, they do have this rule in place. You have 1 minute if you think something was wrong. You have 1 minute. If it's over the minute, too bad. We made this marker. This is what it's going to be. It's unfortunate. It shouldn't necessarily have happened that way, but they have the rules in place. They have the judging in place. That's what has to go happen going forward. So it's a shame for Jordan because she apparently Giles. Did deserve it based on what the score should have been, but they didn't appeal it in time, and that's just kind of the way it's going to be, and that's the way it should be, in my opinion.
Well, let's hope it's fixed before the LA games. And by the way, and the other thing I'd say about this whole thing is, and Charlie, I think you were the one who brought it up. Maybe it was you, Dave. I'm not sure, but there's something about the Olympics being in Paris or any of the foreign countries outside of the U.S. And I'm not saying we shouldn't ever be a host because we obviously should, and LA is a great spot to do it, and we've done it before. But there's something special, I think, about these countries that have so much history and so much more. It's just a different environment. It feels more Olympic. It's almost like when we come here, it's almost like bringing breakdancing into the Olympics itself. It's not. It just doesn't feel quite the same to me.
Well, since you brought it up, breaking.
Ray gun.
The newest Olympic sport. Gentlemen, I like to think that I'm a broad sports fanatic. I especially love the kind of the sports that you never see. Sport climbing is incredible. Surfing is fun. Trampoline. I had so much anxiety over watching trampoline because I was just so afraid they were going to fall off. But I love that stuff. I sat down yesterday. Table tennis. I love watching table tennis. It's fun. Badminton is great. Weightlifting is cool. My son and I were watching yesterday. We're watching breaking because we're like, oh, let's watch that. We haven't seen that yet. And it's like it's a dance battle on a circular table. I had no idea what was going on or how things were being scored. They keep waving at each other and like saying stuff. And it's like, what are they being judged on? Now, and this is not to take away, and I want to be very clear about this. This is not to take away that the athletic feat that is breaking. I mean, these kids are athletes, and it is not easy to do that stuff. But break dancing, number one, is to me a form of art. Number two, if you're going to put break dancing in, why isn't ballet in?
Yeah.
Why isn't tap dancing in? And my daughter's a dancer. And they're
adding all these.
They all work very hard.
Yeah.
Why isn't that in?
Why did we choose this one dancing discipline?
Yeah.
Why is it just this? If we're going to put dancing in, and I'm fine with that, I'd be okay with that. I have no issue that I think those are athletic events, and we can see who the best in the world is. We have, you know, synchronized swimming, which is swim dancing. Why are we choosing just this one singular form? It's just a little odd. I mean, I have nothing against it. Who cares? If people are having fun, they're representing their countries, they're doing things. Who really cares? But
are we bringing on line dancing?
Sure. Why not?
That I'd watch.
I don't care.
Come on, guys.
Who cares? I don't know.
If you're well, and then there's, you know, the argument that is he said my son had said, "Well, what about skateboarding?" I said, "Well, you know, at least there's an apparatus involved, but I don't know. Again, I'm not trying to take away from the dancers because athletically I can't do it, and it was very impressive. I just think of it more as an art form than I do as a sport. I've landed on it.
Listen, I don't know if you've ever looked in the history of the modern Olympics at the very least, but this is far from the weirdest events that they've ever had in the Olympics. Did you know I believe it was in the 1904 to like 1932 or so, city planning was an event in the Olympics.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm 100% serious. You can look up the gold medals for city planning in the 1920s, and it's for big event centers around the world that these architects made.
How is that athletic?
Whatever
sport.
Okay. You're going to have to, because I've done no prep on this, so I don't know, but I just Googled weird Olympic sports. Here's 33 weird Olympic sports, I won't go through all of them, that once found themselves a part of the games. Tug of war. I'd watch that.
That's classic.
live pigeon shooting. Club swinging.
Oh, my goodness.
Something called lacan. I don't even know what that is. Looks like it's fencing with wooden sticks. Well, the steeplechase is in there, which I kind of cool. This looks like highlight. This is bizarre. I had no idea that all these things were part of it.
So breaking really doesn't even make a list.
Ooh, pistol dueling.
Oh, that's a good one.
Well, you can't take back medals in that one, can you? All right, this is fun. Let's take a break. We'll come back and put a wrap on today's show. Okay, we're having some fun with the Olympic sports. I love it. All right, Pete, the freak list.
Yeah, I just thought it would be kind of fun just to kind of go over. Yeah. We talked a little Gopher football already, and I'm very excited. I know we went through what we thought the wins and losses looked like, but I'll tell you what, we've got an offensive tackle, a left tackle, Arante Ursary, who is pretty much right in there for everything you'd ever want in a freak. I mean, this guy, he's 6'6", 330 pounds, and this is not me picking him out. This is what he was able to accomplish. He did a 640-pound squat. Oh. He did a bench press of 412. which is interesting that they have that number. But 409-pound clean and jerk thing. I mean, across the board, he did the 10-yard split of 1.52. This guy weighs 330 pounds, for crying out loud. He hit 18 miles an hour. Is how fast he was running.
Wow.
And he's got a vertical, he's got a broad jump, and then we've got our linebacker, Cody Lindenberg. And I've stood next to this kid. He is a monster. He's a freak. 6'3", 240 pounds. He got up to 21.46 miles per hour in his shuttle run, which is pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's for a linebacker to get that fast and that kind of a run. He broad jumped 10 feet. His vertical's 36 inches. I mean, everywhere you look, he did a clean of 387 pounds, bench 350. I mean, we've got some guys. But Charlie gets credit for this one because I saw Brockington, and I didn't – he's a wide receiver for the Gophers. He put up a number that's just ridiculous. He had a squat of 614 pounds. This is a wide receiver who's really good for the Gophers, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive lineman, you say, okay, 648, that's still a huge number, but it's it makes sense. It's almost 620 for Brockington.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is referencing Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, puts out this athletic freaks list every year of college football players, and these couple Gophers made it onto that.
It's a pretty expansive list.
And Ursary, by the way, more and more people, I mean, he's up for a lot of different awards, the Outland Trophy being probably the most coveted one for him. I mean, for the people who don't go to Gopher games enough, and I know all of us love them and we go, but I'll tell you what, we've got some freaks. We've got some really athletic players, I think, between the portal and the signings and guys coming back who went to LSU or Clemson or other parts of the country who have come back to the Gophers. That's what's got us, I think, so excited about this season.
Yeah,
I think that, you know, that and Brosmer with quarterback, obviously.
Yeah, and Ursary, for the non, you know, college football lovers, he's a guy that's probably, he's going to get drafted. He could get drafted high if he performs well this year. But honestly, even if he doesn't play well this year, he's so big, so strong, so athletic.
He's
probably going to get drafted regardless of how this year goes for him. Yeah. So that's a guy that, if you're, you know, more pro football inclined, you'll be seeing on Sundays going forward, I'm sure.
Yep.
Goodness gracious. This is a fun list. There's some crazy stuff in here.
Yeah. It's amazing how we talk about the athleticism of the Olympians. Some of these guys in college sports, is particularly football, it's just crazy how fast, how strong, how athletic some of these guys are. Unreal.
Well, that clean, I mean, the Ursary, the clean would put him on pretty darn close to a record at 409 pounds. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, fellas. Had fun today. Enjoyed it. We'll do it again next Sunday.
And these couple Gophers made it onto that.
It's a pretty expansive list.
And Ursary, by the way, more and more people, I mean, he's up for a lot of different awards, the Outland Trophy being probably the most coveted one for him. I mean, if for the people who don't go to Gopher games enough, and I know all of us love them and we go, but I'll tell you what, we've got some freaks. We've got some really athletic players, I think, between the portal and the signings and guys coming back who went to LSU or Clemson or other parts of the country who have come back to the Gophers. That's what's got us, I think, so excited about this season.
Yeah,
I think that, you know, that and Brosmer with quarterback, obviously.
Yeah, and Ursary, for the non, you know, college football lovers, he's a guy that's probably, he's going to get drafted. He could get drafted high if he performs well this year. But honestly, even if he doesn't play well this year, he's so big, so strong, so athletic.
He's
probably going to get drafted regardless of how this year goes for him.
Yeah.
So that's a guy that, if you're, you know, more pro football inclined, you'll be seeing on Sundays going forward, I'm sure.
Yep.
Goodness gracious. This is a fun list. There's some crazy stuff in here.
Yeah. It's amazing how we talk about the athleticism of the Olympians. Some of these guys in college sports, is particularly football, it's just crazy how fast, how strong, how athletic some of these guys are. Unreal.
Well, that clean, I mean, the Ursary, the clean would put him on pretty darn close to a record at 409 pounds. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, fellas. Had fun today. Enjoyed it. We'll do it again next Sunday.